Everybody, it's Alan again, and it is Medical Monday, and one of our great friends, Dr. Ronald Stram, is joining us today to talk about integrative medicine. He began his career in emergency medicine and continues to serve as Regional Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at hospitals throughout New York. He's turned his attention to prevention, is the founder of the Center for Integrative Health and Healing in Del Mar, New York, and also, Ron, in Vermont.
In Bennington, Vermont. The Stram Center, and easy to remember. So, yep. It's great to be here, Alan.
Dr. Stram was trained by the world-renowned leader and pioneer in the field of integrative medicine, Dr. Andrew Weil. He's a graduate of the Mount Sinai Medical School and is board-certified in emergency medicine. Dr. Stram, of course, welcome to the Vox Pop. For all those who have questions for him, and the phones are beginning to ring already, and people always call when you're here, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can also, if you're a Robin, tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, as if that isn't enough. But in any case, I want to ask you a very tough question. There are people who write to me and they say, after you're on, how do we know any of this stuff really works? I mean, alternative medicine is sort of foo-foo medicine. How do we know that it's for real?
Well, first off, there is plenty of evidence to support the use of food and good nutrition as a way to improve healthcare. There's plenty of evidence to show that exercise and movement can improve your healthcare. And if we look at things like long-term care, elder care, it's going to be one of the major impacts of the healthcare financial crisis that we are currently in. It actually tops that of cardiac care and of cancer care. And within the next 20 years, it's going to way surpass that by about 50%.
What do you mean say tops that? I don't understand what that
means. In other words, right now it's about $103 billion that goes towards cardiac care and about $105 billion that goes towards elder care. And so,
I see.
So what I'm saying is that the cost of the healthcare system that is elder care is going to be a major impact. And something as very simple as food and changing our food patterns can make a significant impact on the cognitive ability of elder patients.
As in fact, there was just a major story in the New York Times this weekend. They have now found a chemical that is released when you eat steak. That in fact is a predictor of heart attacks. So you make a point.
Yeah, and if you look at simple dietary changes, so something like a high carbohydrate diet, low protein diet, those people have about a 4 times greater likelihood of developing cognitive impairment, dementia.
Who does?
Those elder patients that are eating high carbs, French fries, starches, breads, low proteins tend to have a much greater likelihood of developing dementia than their counterparts that are fed a higher protein diet, higher fat diet, and complex carbohydrate like fruit and vegetables.
Oh, brother. Now you really got me wrong.
Yes.
Because you read something in the New York Times this weekend that says you eat steak, you die of a heart attack. Now you're telling me you eat carbs and you die of Alzheimer's. Take your pick.
But look, if you think about how we used to eat, we didn't have this access to these sort of high carbohydrate meals where essentially if you walk down the convenience aisle, you'll find potato chips, corn chips,
sure.
Breads. Mm-hmm. And those, what we found is that really is a predictor of developing some of the chronic diseases that we have, which is diabetes, heart disease, dementia. And really it is the availability and the affordability of fruits and vegetables that really can make a significant impact. And we have resources in this area. I mean, the food co-op is a great resource.
Yeah.
And so that's
Great Barrington.
And Great Barrington as well. But really, it's being able to develop an infrastructure for chronic diseases that are not just giving a pill. So when you ask about, well, what's the evidence? This is foo-foo type stuff. The evidence is there. It's typically it's harder to fund because it's not you don't have a specific.
You mean the research is harder.
The research is harder to fund, but that doesn't mean it's less valid. I mean, the Mediterranean heart study that was now repeated several times, and the last one was in Spain. They had to stop it because people that were on that diet had such a reduction in their likelihood of developing heart disease that they had to stop
and
it.
And that diet is
so that diet is essentially
fish,
vegetables, rice, beans, complex carbohydrates, low in the processed sugars, processed carbohydrates, actually high in relative fat terms. It's about a 35 to 40% fat diet, typically with good fat, which would be the olive oil or omega-3 type oils. And so that's really what you're looking at trying to work with. It's really developing an infrastructure that I believe we can do with nutritionists, with exercise physiologists, so that it's not just the doctor that's having to give a prescription, well, eat right. Well, what does that mean?
Mm.
And so the system has to really develop a infrastructure that supports this lifestyle management, which I think, in terms of a cost-outcome ratio, will be better in the long term, less costly to the system, and people will feel better and feel more empowered by their own health care.
Okay, let's go to Vicki in Albany. Okay, Vicki, you're on 1-800-348-2551. You want to get in to talk to Dr. Stram? Now's the time, everybody, to do it. Okay, Vicki, you go.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to speak to you, Dr. Stram. You talked about preventive medicine, which we need to zero in on, and I do follow. My question is, I have a relative in California with cancer, and I wondered, is there a way of finding out a holistic medical practice that specializes in cancer, and how would she go about finding this alternative?
Allopathic. First of all, there are a number of facilities in cancer. There's actually the Osler Institute in San Francisco, and I don't know where she is.
She's in Oakland.
Mm. Well, Oakland is actually not that far, but there is a cancer center there that is an integrative cancer center. It's actually Dr. Abrams who runs it. He is an integrative medicine fellow. He's an oncologist. He actually wrote a book on cancer care management, and that's a start. The Block Center is a center out in Illinois, which has, it's probably the premier integrative oncology center, again, an oncologist, and they follow a lot of protocols that can be very beneficial.
Would you just repeat the one in California, since that's where Dr. Abrams?
Osler.
Okay.
Osler.
Right. And Osler Cancer Center.
Yeah, Osler Institute.
And I have one more question, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
In Canada, they were using, my brother was involved in a shark cartilage. And he had wonderful results with pancreatic cancer. What do you think of that at this point? I know sharks now know that they get cancer, tumors. They didn't at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to use this idea of food as medicine, there are different biological terrain markers where you can do blood testing and see where the the deficit is in this person's abnormality, and if shark cartilage is something that maybe lowers inflammatory processes or lowers immune system that may affect that, it's possible. I just think that, again, going to someone who has this knowledge is really important to work with.
But, of course,
with.
You have to worry about the sharks.
Yes.
Because we know that sharks are now getting endangered.
Absolutely. And
right.
And people are using, I mean, shark fin soup is a perfect example sure. where they basically.
In China, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I think, look, I would probably say go to someone who has an integrative background and knows how to work
okay.
with food as
Vicky,
medicine.
Vicky,
so
thanks,
thank
for,
you so
thanks
much.
For your call. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Right,
bye-bye.
Sure. We are going to take 7 seconds or so off. We will come right back to Charles and John. So stay there, Charles and John. Here we go.
Support for WAMZ comes from Transcendental West Hurley in Manhattan. Cosmetic dentistry, including one-visit ceramic crowns and overnight porcelain veneers with Dr. Bruce J. Milner, transcenddental.net. Skidmore College Master's Program, offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields, masters@skidmore.edu. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com.
And we are back. As I promised you, we'll go directly to Charles in Albany. Charles, welcome. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My primary care physician, who's actually been a presenter on Vox Pop several times, has suggested a diet lifestyle change following something called the Primal Blueprint. And I'm wondering if the doctor has any information on that. The person who actually has done several books on this, his name is Mark Sisson, S-I-S-S-O-N, and I'll hang up.
No, don't hang up. We may have to ask you a question. Go ahead.
Sure.
Okay.
One, I'm not sure if the Primal Blueprint is this idea of, I mean, there is there's the Paleolithic diet, which is sort of the primal diet that looks at
yes,
if that's
it is that
okay, so that really looks at the idea that as our ancestors were, again, similar to what we're saying now, we didn't have access to complex carbohydrates, to this farming practices where we would have wheat and rice. And so this diet essentially is devoid of grains, and mostly
right.
it's berries, nuts, certain fruits that are accessible sort of in a paleo diet. It actually has meat, but it's a limited amount of meat. It's not the idea that we have meat at every meal, but it's meat is almost a way to taste. But mostly it's complex carbohydrates in the form of fruits and vegetables, berries and nuts as the main staple of your input of your diet.
And a little saber-toothed tiger on the outside.
Yes. And honestly, that diet has, I've seen remarkable results with. There's a gentleman called Bernstein. He has the Bernstein diet. I will tell you personally, I put my mother on this diet. She's 94 years old. Prior to doing this, she was on about 10 to 12 different medications. It was really difficult to kind of talk to. After the diet, she's lost about 25 pounds. She walks every day. She is much more focused.
Okay,
she's
so what is
95.
It, Ron?
It's called the Paleolithic.
Well, what do you
diet.
Give your mother?
Well, what we give our mother is she gets no grains, none. We don't give her any sugar,
no
sugar.
Bread, no grains.
No bread, no rice, nothing that
no
will
pasta.
Raise no pasta, nothing that will raise her sugar index.
So what does her average meal look like?
Her average meal looks like, well, we might use cauliflower and we'll chop it up and it'll look a little bit like rice, and then she'll have maybe some salmon with it, and we'll have cabbage, and she loves that, and we'll have apples, things that she can digest relatively easy, but not, there is no carbs in terms of a grain carb in her diet. And the results were dramatic. I mean,
the biggest selling point for me was that my physician went on it himself, lost 16 pounds in 4 weeks.
Was his first name Paul? Or
no,
was his first name Jeff? Okay, got it.
Jeff. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it works. Most people that have had pain problems, let's say joint pain, arthritic type pain, a lot of times that pain goes away. People that have gut issues, irritable bowel problems that weren't ever diagnosed tend to get better. People's blood sugar tends to be lower because, again, you're not raising insulin levels and blood sugar in spikes.
Okay, so if you wanted to go to the bookstore and get
Kindle.
Get a Kindle. What are you looking for again?
Blueprint.
Primal Blueprint.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, by Mark Sisson. Sisson.
Okay.
Great.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Charles.
Okay, thanks a
lot.
Welcome. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great call. Let's go to John in Dover. How are things in Dover there, John?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really enjoyed your opening to the show where you talked about justifying things like nutrition. And obviously, it's going to be a very big market. My question for you is that I've encountered in the past running into people who are certified nutritionists but aren't always experienced with traditional medicine.
Right.
And will tend to have some pretty off-the-wall, radical, and really seemingly unfounded theories about things as part of their practice. Do you have any advice for people seeking out a nutritionist or another type of therapist that try and sort the wheat from the chaff?
Well, I mean, I think one, you'd want to make sure, I mean, typically what we would recommend is you go by word of mouth. If you've had someone who's had success with working with nutritionists, there are programs, there's an integrative nutrition program in New York City, there's people that have gone to the integrative nutrition conferences, where really this idea of the Mediterranean diet, the Paleolithic diet, the wheat belly diet, the idea that food is medicine, and that if they understand that concept and have had success with it, then I would look at it and just look at their credentials and where they trained out of.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. I think the point that John was making is there's always somebody out there trying to make an easy buck,
right,
and taking advantage and saying outrageous things. And, you know, I've had a very good friend. I lost a very good friend who had a particular kind of therapy that she clearly had been sold a bill of goods on. And it was nutty. I don't want to get into what it was, but it was really crazy. So you have to be very careful here.
You do have to be careful, and you have to look at what their credentials are. And honestly, if it sounds like what I always recommend, if people are very ill and they're going to see a practitioner, bring a patient advocate with you. Bring someone who's close to you, a friend, a family member, who could actually hear through some of the selling points that someone may be trying to sell you on. I also believe that, look, when you're in a vulnerable situation,
exactly,
when you're very, very sick, you need to have an advocate can actually separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that there are so many people out there who are facing, you know, almost certain death, and somebody comes along and tries to sell them something, and they take the chance.
I think that, look, it needs to be based on
peach pits, you know, you name it.
Right, on sound evidence and like the Block Center, Keith Block has written a book, Life Over Cancer, and it's an excellent book, and it really outlines this idea of food, medicine, exercise, meditation, the things that really do no harm first.
Okay, so all five phones are ringing. Let's go to Brian in Shelvin Falls. Brian, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Alan, thank you once again for a great show, and Doc, thanks for all that you've said already, because as far as I'm concerned, you're right on. I have just a point to make and then a question. And that is, when you speak about the Paleolithic diet and Mediterranean diet, there was someone that years ago, 20 years ago, wrote a book, biochemist, endocrinologist, Barry Sears, on the Zone Diet, that basically said what the Mediterranean diet said. And as you've already pointed out, and I think you're speaking of Dr. Bernstein, that did the diabetic book. I have a type 1 diabetic child, and it's a tremendous book for anybody, but especially diabetics. So Barry Sears talked about the 30-40-30 diet, 30 good fats, 30 good proteins, and 40 of carbohydrates.
What's a good protein?
Good protein could be, meat products can be a good protein. Eggs can be a good protein. Milk products, if you can tolerate them, can be a good protein. Fish, but mostly you got to be careful, Alan. As you know personally, I remember years ago when you spoke to how much sushi you ate, and you found out that you had a metal toxicity from eating too much fish.
Not too much fish, too much tuna.
Too much, well, tuna's a fish.
But there are other things that are also fish. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and sardines are better than tuna because they're lower on the food chain, right?
Yes.
But my point is this, Doc, and I want to draw on your experience and knowledge base, which seems pretty right on, and that is, can you talk about how these diets trigger the anti-inflammatory effect in the body? Because as Barry, an endocrinologist, said, we really should be eating for the hormonal system that sets up this anti-inflammatory balance through the eicosanoids, which I'm sure you'll explain, so that we have this boost in our immune system, reduction of aging, and, of course, diet's one way to do that. Our thoughts are another, and exercise is another. Could you speak to the anti-inflammatory effect?
Sure. And Barry Sears was pretty right on. I mean, that's the Zone diet really does look at this idea of the Mediterranean-like diet. And one of the inflammatory pathways, which is the eicosanoic pathway, is prompted by some of the foods, whether it's the carbs, but mostly it's actually the omega-6 fats that prompt the eicosanoic pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And so lipid peroxidation or lipid free radicals, which can happen with these sort of fats that we typically use, whether it's a trans fat or even just conventional omega-6 fats, which we tend to have a predominance in this society. It tends to be about a ratio of 5 to 1 of those of the omega-3 fats. And what they do is they set up this inflammatory pathway, which the good news is by changing your diet and changing that ratio where you have more omega-3s, omega-9s like that found in fish or in olive oil, you can change and reduce your eicosanoic pathways.
Okay, very quickly, Ron Stram. Thank you very much, Brian. Appreciate it. Ron Stram, very quickly, how do people get in touch with you?
We are thestramcenter.com. The phone number is 689-2244. Our Bennington office is 802-445-something like that.
Something like that. But look up Stram Center.
StramCenter.com, and both the numbers will be
That's great. Okay, let's go to Irene in Conesville. Okay, Irene, you're on.
Hi, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Dr. Stram. I'm calling today to find out if you have some views and some ideas about nutritional therapy for arthritis, general arthritis.
Sure. The first thing I would do and the first thing that we see in terms of joint or joint pain, arthritic type pain, is get off wheat. Basically, what we see is gluten or gluten sensitivity is one of the most prominent in terms of the arthritic complaints. Look at food. I mean, I would tell you that really, if you could, try a grain-free. So really, actually, not only wheat, but any other grains, just because many of the grains are very highly processed, whether it's rice, corn, or wheat. And because they're highly processed, they can form an inflammatory cascade in your body that, because you have small circulation in your joints, it gets clogged there. And so I would say look to do that. Things as simple as taking fish oil, which fish oil, fortunate or unfortunate, is probably safer in some ways than eating fish because it tends to be, in a way, processed and removed of any of the mercury or problems with contaminants. And so that would be a very good way to just start. But I will tell you that likely if you go off grains or wheat, your arthritic problems will reduce.
There is such a major portion of a diet. What do you think, as someone who's really going to try to do this, they could use as a substitute for that?
Well, like I mentioned before, cauliflower can be used as you mash it up, and it looks pretty much like a grain. What I would say is you use your vegetables, whether it's broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, your greens. You can prepare them in ways that actually make them taste and have a texture that's similar to a grain-like texture.
Now, there's an article in the New York Times today that says sodium is now considered to be one of the great bad things in your
that's
life.
That's always the enemy.
Sure. I've always thought so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
just quickly, what about glucosamine? Do you think that has any effect on arthritis?
I think if so glucosamine can have an effect. If it is a...
good or bad?
It either will work or it will not work.
Uh-huh.
Now, the only issue with glucosamine is those people that have problems with blood sugar control. Glucosamine, because it has a glucose moiety in it or a glucose molecule in it, uh-huh. it can raise your blood sugar level. So people that have diabetes need to just be careful with taking glucosamine. But I'd say it's worth a try. Typically, we would recommend it's for an adult dose about 1,500 milligrams per day, and you got to give it about 3 to 4 weeks and see if it can help.
Irene, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Kathleen in the Berkshires. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi, yes, doctors. Have you ever heard of Dr. David Wolf?
He sounds familiar, but why don't you tell me?
Well, I was just wondering about him. I know some people who are very involved in his nutrition program. And he certainly is, I know he's a doctor, but it seems pretty expensive to get involved in his program. And I just wondered if you had heard of him.
I mean, I've heard of him. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, I think, look, I will tell you that expense-wise is because when you go to your primary care doctor and you're going to go there for prevention, you have one visit per year that is paid for prevention.
Right.
Now, obviously, we would think that that probably isn't going to help someone who's got diabetes, high blood pressure,
right.
heart disease. So unfortunately, right now, the way that the incentives are for physicians is that it actually pays to keep people sick because we get paid, and I get paid as an ER doc. The sicker you are, I get paid more. That is.
But But Ron, you don't keep people sick. You're not that kind of person.
No. So what we do is we say, you know what, this doesn't make sense. We're going to still give you the time and the effort to really try to help you with your lifestyle changes. I believe that there's ways to do it in cost-effective ways.
Okay. All right.
So I think that you can do it. It means getting support groups, community leaders. These things can happen.
Kathleen, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Amy in Queensbury, where everybody plays by the rules. Okay, Amy, you're on.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for taking my call, fellas. I have a quick question. I am a pescatarian, which is someone whose main source of protein is fish. Big on grains, big on fruits and vegetables. If I were to take grains out of my diet for better, per se, health, what essential vitamins should I be supplementing?
I mean, honestly, if you take grains out, you can get so much of your vitamins from earth foods, basically vitamins, minerals. They live in the earth, and if you're eating organic and you're not eating an earth that has been either contaminated or removed of its nutrients, you will get most of your nutritional substances from earth-like food. So you can substitute yams for getting the highest source of vitamin A. It actually gives you an unbelievable source of vitamin A.
So yams are okay?
Yams are okay. You can have sour cherry juice, and half a cup will give you 2 grams of vitamin C. Avocados with vitamin E. What I'll tell you, calcium with almonds. So I think if you eat earth foods, you'll be able to get your nutrition from that.
So you don't want to... go ahead.
I'm sorry. What's your take on dairy?
Dairy can be problematic to many people. A lot of people have allergies to either the casein, which is the protein part of dairy. They can be lactose intolerant, meaning they don't have lactase, which is the enzyme that helps to digest dairy. We, as a group, never grew up actually having a lot of dairy. So I'd say dairy is fine in limited amounts, but shouldn't be a staple because a lot of the gut problems or issues with people that have irritable bowel problems or can have that from dairy.
Okay. Thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you.
Right. What about, raise an interesting question, there's a whole new look on a hydroponic, you know, growing vegetables and things. And obviously, you just said you don't want to substitute for what's in the earth. The hydroponic, I suspect, is problematic.
That's what I mean, I am not aware of nutritional intake of what the hydroponic...
what they put into the water.
What they put into the water. But it's not a natural way of growing food. Now, I've seen it, and it, you know, we were just in I think it was Chicago Airport, and they had a whole hydroponic section of growing some herbs and vegetables. And it's a very interesting, especially in areas that have low resource to that kind of earth. But I do think it's a different way of growing, and it may not be as nutritious.
Okay, thanks, Ron. And we're going to take a very, very short break. We'll come back for the last third of the program. Jody, Martin, Frank, and Susan, stay there.
Support for WAMC comes from Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley, gastroenterology and urology specialists with offices in Dutchess, Ulster, and Orange counties, premiermedicalhv.com. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org. And Anderson Center for Autism, Statsburg, New York, helping to educate the public on New York State's new autism insurance legislation, andersoncares.org.
We're back with Dr. Ron Stram of the Stram Centers. Okay, let's go to Joni in Vernon, New Jersey. Okay, Joni, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. And I love Medical Monday. And I have a two-part question, Dr. Stram.
Sure.
One is, I do eat your diet. I believe in no grains, and that's great. And I'm more into organic. Now, my dentist is recommending that I get a titanium implant in my gums to replace a bridge that I had before. Is there any problem with that?
Well, titanium as a metal has very low reactivity. It's in the same family as aluminum. Titanium has that same. It's a higher weight than aluminum. It tends to have very low reactivity as opposed to something like mercury, which a lot of fillings were made out of, which tends to have highly reactive. I think the jury is out. I think that people don't know what the effects will be in long term, but titanium as a metal has a very low reactivity. It's used in a lot of joints in hip replacement and knee replacement, and it seems not to cause a problem. So I'd say the likelihood is that it's a safe metal to use.
Okay, because once it's in. And then the other part of my question was, I had a hair analysis, and I was loaded with uranium. And how do I get rid of that?
Well, I mean, one, what do you do for a living? Because that's kind of an unusual thing to be exposed to.
And where do you live?
And where do you live?
Yes, I had my well water tested, and the only thing we could come up with is I had a lot of CAT scans.
Okay, that'd be pretty unlikely. I would actually say repeat the hair analysis from another. From another, because look, I'll just tell you that, you know, testing can be problematic if it's not.
Well, you but also may live over some place that has, you know, stuff in the soil or the rocks.
Yes.
Right.
So,
yeah. No, we had the water tested, but they asked if I had granite countertops, and I don't.
Well, what's the name of that test? What are they always testing for, you know, for...
heavy metal testing? Or?
No, when you're testing for uranium.
Oh, radon.
Radon. Have you had a radon kit?
Yeah.
Yes, and it was fine. It was below the 4.0.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual. I would probably say get retested. Whenever I get a test that really seems abnormal and unlikely based on what the situation is, repeat it.
Hey, Jody, thanks for the call. Appreciate
thank you very
it.
Much. Yeah. Bye now.
Let's go to Martin in New Paltz. Hey, Martin, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and at that point in time, I stopped drinking dairy milk and went and was utilizing soy-based milk. And someone told me that soy-based milk with cancer is not the ideal thing and to switch to almond milk. And I wonder your opinion upon that, if any.
Sure. First, Martin, I'm sorry to hear about your diagnosis.
Thank you.
One, I will tell you that this idea is based on the fact that when people looked at people with prostate cancer, they found that they had a higher intake of dairy than other people. And so that's where this idea came from. The idea is that maybe it's a higher calcium intake, or that it's really that you're having a pasteurized and dairy that is maybe not so good for you. The difference between soy milk and almond milk is that they're completely different, and that almond milk is made from almonds and soy is a legume.
Yeah.
There is controversy about soy because it has potentially estrogenic properties. What I will tell you is that all the studies that look at real soy, and I mean soy that's based on a food, not on a processed soy product, which, again, so as we spoke in earlier, soy, wheat, corn, highly processed, a lot of pesticides and keeping them down, GMOs, all this stuff to make it, you know, grow faster and stay on the shelf longer. If you get an organic soy, if you
yes.
have, then actually the probably acts as something called a selective estrogen or testosterone modulator. Probably is even helpful when you look at places like China or you look at places like Japan. People that have a high intake of soy in their diet, they tend to have much lower rates of the glandular or hormone-related type cancers, whether it's breast or prostate. So I will tell you that based on that, if you go for organic or food, that's soy, you're probably okay.
So that you recommend perhaps I do drink organic, at this point, almond milk in my cereal. You would suggest I go to soy milk?
I'd say that if you're comfortable with soy, and based on what I just told you, and there's been a lot of research looking at soy as this potential aggregator of hormone related cancers,
yes.
The jury is pretty much closed on that. If you look at that research, and there, I mean, thousands of publications that show that not only does it have potentially no risk, but maybe even benefit. And I will give you this
wonderful
one study that was done with women that had endometrial cancer. It was a 500 patient study with endometrial cancer. They were put in two groups. One had a soy-based diet, but it was all organic and natural soy,
yes.
and the other was not. And they had a lower recurrence rate, those that were on the soy-based diet.
Okay, so
Martin.
Off I go to buying soy milk.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Thank you, Martin.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And we'll go to Frank in Colony. Frank in Colony, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Frank.
Thank you, Alan. Hello, doctor.
Hi, Frank.
Have you heard of the diet, I don't know the name of it, where you, 2 days a week you only consume 600 calories? I don't know the name of the diet.
Well, it's an interesting point you bring up. But if you look at sort of any diet across the board,
yeah.
those diets that have the lowest calories, when 1,000 calories, 900 calories, in terms of longevity, people tend to live longer on lower calorie diet. If you want to think about it, it's like having a car. If you put a lot of mileage on your car, it doesn't matter if it's 3 years old or 20 years old. If you've got 50,000 miles on your car after 20 years old, it's kind of like a new car. If you've got 50,000 miles on a two-year-old car, it's kind of like a five-year-old car. So the idea is that if you put less calories in your body, your engine doesn't have to work so hard. So this idea of going on a 600-calorie diet twice a week is the idea of trying to taper down your food intake so that you have actually less calories.
I had heard that the idea behind it is that somehow it unclogs the pancreas. I don't know if it's oversimplifying it, but...
yeah, I mean, I think it's probably oversimplifying, and I think that typically, like I said, when you look at people that have lower calorie diets, they tend to have the highest longevity.
Okay, Frank, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, let's go to Susan in Red Hook. Susan.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hello, doctor. Thank you. I am a retired professional, so I don't consider myself to be too gullible, but there's a folk remedy that I have started using. And people laugh when I tell them about it. It's gin-soaked raisins for arthritis. I have had pains in my joints, all of my joints, for the last 20 or so years and tried prescriptions and so forth without too much luck. And I saw this, I've seen this, I've read about it, and I saw it on the Internet, and I researched it on the internet, and I said, well, why not give it a try? I've tried everything else. And believe it or not, for the last 2 years, I have been pain-free. Now, I'm wondering if you have any experience with this. Some people say it must be a placebo, but if you go on the People's Pharmacy website, you'll find there's pages and pages of testimonials of people who didn't believe in it, and they took it, and it worked. Doctors who are taking it, and they give some scientific reason that it's the sulfites in the raisins. You have to use yellow raisins, and it's the junipers and the gin and the reaction, something, you know, does something. But I don't know. Do you have any experience of it or an opinion on this?
Well, one, I think if things work and they're not harmful, then that's great. I do think, and I think that's one.
Okay.
Basically, gin is a solvent, right? So it's going to be able to remove some of the things that you can't get by just digesting it. Raisins have resveratrol. They have sulfites. Sulfites act as anti-inflammatory, antioxidant through your antioxidant pathways, and that could all be helpful for you in terms of reducing the inflammation for your arthritis. Mm. So I do think that it is possible, and like I said, if it seems to work, and it is. I mean, I would say it'd be interesting to see if you had a glass of red wine if it would have a similar effect with resveratrol.
Well, I did drink wine. I gave it up a while ago. I figured I'm getting too old to handle it anymore, but I used to drink wine, and it didn't seem to help. I mean, you know, well, before I started taking the raisins, and I didn't notice any effect on the arthritis. Maybe I didn't feel it as much, but...
Susan... It's Alan. I just wanted to ask you, and no insult intended, but do you drink gin in addition to the gin soaked raisins?
No, I don't drink anything now.
Okay.
But the thing is, they say the way you make this is you let the gin soak in the raisin for a week, and by the time the week is up, all the alcohol is evaporated, and there's like 0.009% of alcohol in one raisin or something. So, and I don't taste any gin when I do eat the raisins after the week is up. So, you know, but I don't know how much is this in my mind. I've tried other things, though, folk remedies like pectin and some other things, and they didn't work. So I just don't
know.
Sounds
very interesting. I mean it.
Yeah.
So, hey, Susan, thanks for the call. Want to get to everybody.
Alan.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go to Kevin and Hawley. Okay, Kevin, you're on.
Hi. Dr. Stram, several weeks ago, I think you referenced some probiotic-related research and the topic of actually intestinal floral transplant of some of those flora had been being researched in New York. And I'm interested to have you speak a little bit more about it and maybe mention where that research is going on.
The research is actually being done in NYU. And it's actually, they are doing research on mice and looking at the microbiome, which is the bacterial mapping in our gut and what bacteria may have benefit over others. Something like if you have H. pylori as a child, as a baby and as a baby growing up, what they found is that those that have a greater percentage of H. pylori as babies tend to have lower rates of asthma and other infectious diseases. The reference is, the doctor is a Dr. Cheung, C-H-E-U-N-G, and he's in the gastroenterology, he's a doc in gastroenterology research at NYU. You could look him up and you'll see he has a good amount of publications on this idea of the microbiome. So
okay. We're going to have to let you go simply because we're trying to get everybody in. Thanks a lot. Okay, Patrick Donjus has just appeared with some social media news. What do you got,
Hi,
Patrick?
Guys. D on Twitter, Twitter handle @SpiritBear, asks, Doctor, would you discuss what side effects can occur when taking magnesium oxide over the long term?
Well, magnesium oxide, magnesium is a natural element in your body. It's necessary for many muscular reactions. Magnesium oxide is one of the less expensive forms to take as a supplement. I would just say over the long term, preferentially, you'd want to use magnesium citrate, and I would recommend using foods to get that, and those are the earth foods like we mentioned.
Again, what are the earth foods?
The earth foods are like the skins of potatoes, root vegetables, carrots, anything that really grows out of the ground.
So potatoes are bad. Regular potatoes are bad, right?
Right.
Simply, sweet potatoes are
sweet
good.
Sweet potatoes are good. Yams are good.
Which is better?
Squash.
Yams are better. Yams are better. Okay.
Delicious.
Thanks a lot,
Thank
Patrick
you, Doctor.
Just appreciate it. Okay. And let's go to Gary in Colony. Okay, Gary, you're on.
Thank you. First, Doc, I always recommend you. I've been studying this stuff for like 20 years.
Thank
and
you.
It's just constant. I mean, but in this area, they always say, well, who can I go to in this area? And I say you.
Thank you very much.
Because I don't know anybody else, to tell you the truth, now. And for people saying alternative medicine, no, alternative medicine is really what's been around forever. And, as you know, the medicine there's practiced today is really, you know, really not backed by too much, and that's today. But anyhow, I wanted to clear up, David Wolf,
yeah.
He's not a medical doctor. Both his parents are medical doctors. He's a superfood vegan. In fact, I'm looking at his book right now, Superfoods, the Food Medicine of the Future. He's very good. And for the lady with the pancreatic, finding out about pancreatic cancer, you probably know of Dr. Luis Gonzalez.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's had people over 20 years.
Okay, Gary, you got to hurry up because you've got five people behind you. Go ahead.
Right. And also, you could there's a Dr. Constantine Casales. He's out in Texas. You can go there and stay for a week. And you've also got Hippocrates, which I know Alan knows because you had Dr. Clement up here.
Indeed.
In Florida. And they cure everybody of everything.
Well,
so, I mean, these people just got to really,
Well, clearing everybody of everything is a little
bit. Well, you know what I mean.
Excessive.
I mean, nobody's cured of everything.
Hey, Gary, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's go to John in Albany. Okay, John, you're on.
The piece that was referring to the uranium that was found in the hair analysis, I just wanted to make people aware of the fact that in the 1980s, NL Industries was operating on Central Avenue and was illegally discharging large amounts of depleted uranium oxide into the air, and it was deposited across Albany and all the way into Rensselaer. And so the soil testing was absolutely conclusive that there's a deposition pattern from that uranium. So, in terms of, the isotope analysis, it might be able to be traced back to that if she wanted to have further analysis done.
John, thank you for that. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Bruce in Heath, Massachusetts. Bruce, you're on.
Yes, hi. My son is 22. He's had ulcerative colitis for 4 years, has not yet found remission. I can't get his doctors to talk to him about diet. And, he's 22, so he's not that, he does his best. He's still in school and college, but he's, not that conscientious about his diet. And he'd rather keep taking these medications that aren't working for him. So can you speak to ulcerative colitis?
Absolutely. I mean, again, I'm sorry to hear that, because really what we found is ulcerative colitis, you can make a significant impact by looking at the diet.
Mm.
And I would say, like we spoke about during the program, grains.
Yep.
And really it is about...
No grains.
So no grains. And really looking at the intestinal flora, I would recommend him getting what's called a comprehensive digestive stool analysis, which looks specifically at your bacterial flora, what he has in it, what he doesn't have in it. Right now, I mean, essentially the treatment for ulcerative colitis is anti-inflammatory medications, which is basically like... you have a headache, take Tylenol. It doesn't really address the problem.
Right, exactly.
Okay, hey, Bruce, I'm so sorry to do this.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to try to get everybody in. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Camille in Woodstock. Camille, you're on.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. I have a very big problem, and the doctor has prescribed reclassed infusions. Yeah, and I want to take something other than that. She says I've had recurring spinal fractures. I have hyperparathyroidism that cannot be operated on.
But wait a second, Ron, because we're running out of time here. The reclass has been taken out of commission, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been taken out because there's real problems.
We're not given reclass anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know But no, they're not giving reclassed, and so I'm not sure what your doc is doing. But it sounds like you have very significant, you have conditions that really can affect your bone density. There are ways to do that. We honestly don't have a lot of time to go through that. Certainly, you could look at some of the stuff that we have on our blog and our website to help you with information.
Okay, but reclast is off the market, you're saying?
Yes. Well, I know it's somebody close to me who took it, and it's gone.
Yeah, it's
They don't do it anymore.
They typically do not give it anymore, and if they do, it has to be under very strict conditions, which you may be in that category, but I would say look for something else.
Thank you, Camille.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right, let's go to Jane in Albany. Jane, very quickly, you're almost done. Go ahead. Jane.
Thank you, Camille. Thank you,
bye-bye. Hey, Jane. Okay, Jane's off. She broke the rule, and now she's off. Hedvig, very quickly, Hedvig.
Yes. Hedvig, I have two brief questions.
No, only one because we're out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, well, about is it possible that eating meat, which I do, by the way, affects your calcium profile, and could it cause problems because of the acidic response with your calcium?
I mean, meat is considered an acidic type of diet, and so yes, it can affect the absorption of calcium.
Hedvig,
how would you deal with that in terms of the question of how much meat you eat, or shouldn't you eat any, or what?
Okay, so if you eat organic meat, then you have a higher ratio of omega-3 fatty acids. That actually has a lower acidic content. So I'd say go for organic, grazed. You know, if it lives well, eat it.
Okay, Hedvig, we are out. Nope, sorry, we're out of time. I am so sorry. We got you in, but that's it. We're out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to those, Hedvig, who left on the line. Ron Stram, thank you so much. Support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice. Physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Eric Krupke for answering the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok. Tomorrow on the Vox Pop, an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.